Listen carefully. You hear that sound? You hear it? That's the drumbeat. It's getting louder and louder against Volodymyr Zelensky. As President Trump, members of Congress, European leaders, and now the EU are calling him out for corruption. However, it's the protests and the calls for his removal from his own people and his own soldiers that are causing a stir inside Ukraine. Meanwhile, the Russian army, quietly and without fanfare from most of the Western media or pretty much anybody else, has continued to just move across Ukraine and is now on the verge of taking the most important Ukrainian stronghold. It is time for the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. And what I want to do right now as we get started here is talk to you about something that I think is the trigger point, really, the trigger point for the deterioration of Mr. Zelensky's reputation of late for corruption. Now, it comes in the form of Trump speak. What is Trump speak, right? If you listen carefully, you can understand what the president of the United States is trying to say. If you listen carefully, right? It just so happens I speak Trump. So let me give you some of the key phrases to listen for here amid what is a bit of a ramble, because he's really being asked about, you know, this deal he's doing, fooling the Europeans into paying for all the things in Ukraine. But he goes in a different direction. First, you're going to hear him refer to $350 billion to Ukraine. And I think he says something like, or whatever, right? And that means he doesn't think it was really used for the war. And he doesn't approve of the cause. That's what he's secretly saying with these comments. He also says, we're going to find out about this more someday, implying that someday there'll be an investigation. They'll find out somebody was sticking the money in their pocket, Zelensky. Then he says, I have a feeling it wasn't spent on equipment. And then he says, we, referring to the United States, will no longer be paying. So listen for these things. Here it is.
Biden gave away $350 billion worth of equipment or cash. Worse than equipment, cash. So we want to find out about that someday, I guess, right? But they were supposed to buy their own equipment, but, I have a feeling they didn't spend every dollar on the equipment. But they are brave. Look, they're fighting a hard fight, and we're no longer going to be do that. Our great companies, we make the best military equipment in the world, and our great companies are going to be selling now, and they'll be using it. So even those people that don't want to be in the war, and I'm one of them, but even those people are saying, wow, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So they'll be able to defend themselves, and we will no longer be paying for it. And I think that's a very big, thing.
Yeah, it's not an intellectual discussion. It's kind of a ramble, but he makes his point with the comments that you can pick apart. Now, by the way, right about the time Mr. Trump was making these comments, or maybe because Mr. Trump was making these comments, anti-Zelensky protests suddenly intensified in places like Kiev and Kharkov and Lvov and Dnieper and Odessa, for example. Look at this. Those are all the places that are essentially holding Mr. Zelensky to account for the country's corruption. This is crazy, right? I was on vacation when I started looking at these pictures on the news, and I was like, what's happening? By the way, this is the worst kept secret, perhaps in the entire world, the story of corruption in Ukraine. Yet in this case, Zelensky seems to have triggered these protests you're seeing right here, these demonstrations himself, by passing a law that made it illegal to investigate his corruption. Imagine passing a law to investigate your corruption. That's like saying, yes, I'm corrupt, but there's nothing you can do about it. So now, see, that really, truly pissed people off. Citizens, soldiers, both on the front lines who were getting pounded by the Russian army, and those who are coming home and now are going to be joining some of these protests. Yes, soldiers have been seen in these protests. So what does Zelensky do? Well, he's a smart guy, right? Sensing he's in trouble, he calls off the law to try and stop these protests, which didn't stop him, by the way. And are you ready for this? He blames the entire situation on corruption, on Russia.
Дуже детально.
I will propose to the Verkhovna Rada of Ukraine a bill that will be a response, that will provide strength to the law enforcement system, and there will be no Russian influence or interference in the activities of law enforcement agencies and, very importantly, all the norms for the independence of anti-corruption institutions will be in place.
So it's Russia's fault. He blames Russia. Oh, my God. I wonder where he got that idea, right? It's like, you can't make this up. I mean, one wonders where he learned that strategy. Let's see. Duh. What did the media in the United States do when they didn't like who the people in the United States voted for when they picked Trump? Oh, they blame Russia. Something proven now to be an unabashed lie in a new report that was just put out a couple weeks ago by Tulsi Gabbard. Here's another one. Let's suppose you're a German leader, right? And you just found out, and you don't like the fact that the CIA blew up a pipeline that provides your citizens with natural gas so that they can heat their homes in the winter cheaply and efficiently. So what do you do? Do you go after the CIA? Do you investigate who else may have done it? No. You blame the Russians. You blame Russians and say, oh, the Russians blew up their own pipeline. Like that even makes any damn sense, right? So what does Zelensky do now when he's accused by his own people and others of corruption? Thousands of people take to the streets to tell him, hey, you shouldn't be corrupt. What does he do? He says, no, it's not me. It's the Russians. Yeah, the Russians did this somehow, right? Something even the U.S. media, right? I'm a part of it. I come from the U.S. media. We usually buy and we peddle every anti-Russian story that we are fed. Here's an anti-Russian story. Okay, let me read it. Not going to check it, right? Even they are saying now that this is not true. Even they are not believing this one. Now, I will say this. Is it possible that the Russians have benefited from Zelensky's corruption, malfeasance, military incompetence, and other government corruption issues that we've read about and are now seeing? Yeah. And I'm going to show you the proof, and I'm going to do it with maps. I'm going to show you two maps, okay? Here's the first one. This is an internet map. It's, by the way, put out by Deep State. You could look up Deep State yourself, right? It is not a pro-Russian map. You could look that up yourself. It's considered generally fair. It employs more than 70 to 100 people who constantly verify the data that comes from the war, right? From the front lines. Look at that. You see where the Russian forces there in the light red are? Where exactly 3 months ago they were in connection with the most strategically important city in the conflict, which is Pokrovsk. See it right there in the middle, right? That's the city of Pokrovsk, the one that we've got highlighted in red. Now, they were still quite a distance away. See, the Russians are kind of far away. See where it says Russian Federation? That's kind of where they were, because look at that, because it's about to move in a minute when I ask the director to do so. According to almost every military expert, by the way, who are either pro-Russian or pro-Ukraine, it doesn't matter, if and when the Russian army takes Pokrovsk, it's pretty much going to mean Katie bar the door for Ukraine. Katie bar the door. That means they're done, right? Again, look how far away they were on April 26th. And now, go ahead, Gene, switch the image. Look where they are now. Look at that. The advance is sizable. It's impressive, right? And look at Pokrovsk. It's surrounded. Well, the Ukrainian military has received $350 billion, arguably more funding than any other army in history. As we look at this, it's actually the Russian army that has become larger, more efficient, better equipped, and more lethal against its opposing military, the Ukrainian military. While generally, by the way, sparing civilians that it considers ethnic peers. Look at this map. You see the white dot there? That's the city that they need to take. I mean, don't go by what the military experts say. Look at this map. Tells the story not only of an impressive flank maneuver, as the military folks would call that, but it also shows an obvious intention to go around the city. See, they're going above it and below it. They're not going through it. They're not going into the city. They're not going to kill the civilians because the Russian soldiers relate to these civilians. They could be their cousins, for all we know. Certainly DNA-wise, they are, right? So they're giving them time to leave the city so it can be military on military. That's what's going on right there in Pokrovsk. The most important hub for the entire Ukraine military is now, according to military analysts, just weeks, possibly even days, from being taken by the Russian army. Now, I got to tell you, that's a hard reality for Zelensky, and it's causing collateral political damage for him as well. Look at this headline. It's a brand new headline. Look what it says, right? And it's written, ironically, in the pro-Ukraine New York Times. The EU is cutting aid to Ukraine over corruption concerns. Both the New York Times and the EU, who have sold Zelensky to me, to you, to the entire world as Mother Teresa in a sweatshirt, right? They are coming out now for the first time ever and criticizing him and even cutting off part of his funding. What does it say there? $1.7 billion? So are European leaders distancing themselves from Zelensky to try and save their own reputations? Like, oh, no, we didn't like this guy to begin with. We knew there was a problem with him. Yeah, right? Sure you did. Now, the question is this going to work? I want you to listen to this guy because he's a friend of mine, and I think he's very smart. Listen to what U.S. retired Colonel Doug McGregor says about that.
These people are on borrowed time. Ruta and his friends in London, Paris, and Berlin, Bats and the rest of them, they're about as popular as the plague right now. They're going to be removed from power.
So these people are separating themselves from Zelensky. But there's a question, and there's really another way of looking at this, and that is that maybe these people are simply trying to get rid of Zelensky because now they want to replace him with someone else who maybe is more effective to their cause. In other words, here's what I'm saying. The puppet master simply may be preparing to buy a brand new puppet, not necessarily to change his act, his show, his performance. I want to talk about that as well as what is really happening right now inside Ukraine with somebody who knows Ukraine, who knows the people of Ukraine, who understands the government of Ukraine and understands Zelensky himself because he worked with him. Andrei Telechenko is going to join me right here when we come back. Don't go away.
Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly, all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
You know, I just came back from vacation, and I was thinking about a lot of things when I had a chance to have a vacation. And one of the things I thought about was why I'm here, right? What am I doing? You know, I made a decision that I'm going to be away from my children, and I love my children. You know, leave our ranch home in South Florida, which is pretty cushy life in a, you know, multi-million dollar ranch home with horses and all that other stuff. And to be here and have my wife join me here in a city, by the way, I'm really coming to love. But still, you know, life has sacrifices, and we all make sacrifices. And sometimes we make them for moral reasons, because we decide that things should just be different. Truths, for example. I'm a journalist. How can I possibly not believe in truths, right? I mean, this is something that is as germane to this particular industry, if you call yourself a journalist, as anything else. So to me, truth, there's no such thing as Russia's truth or America's truth or, no, it's just truth, right? You can't put Iran's truth or Israel's truth over the other, or China's truth or India's truth. Everybody has a right to a perspective. And there's something else that matters in this case, which is why people make sacrifices. This situation between the West and Russia could lead to something that could affect all of us, could lead to a world war. This is the kind of thing, this is the kind of issue. These are the times when good men and women should come together to figure things out, even if they have to make a sacrifice, because it's the right moral thing to do. I thought about that a lot while I was taking a break, and I think it's important to say that. I think it's important to mention these things. And it's particularly important with the guest that I'm about to introduce to you. His name is Andrei Telechenko. He's an ex-diplomat and former advisor to Ukraine, and he's good enough to join us now. And here's why, for those of you who are wondering why I'm introducing him this way, it's for this reason. This man that you're looking at right now, he could be sitting in Kiev right now, making a ton of money and living a really good life. And you know these stories about corruption and how well some of the people around Zelensky are living? They got it pretty good. And most of them have houses in London and here and there and who the hell knows where. Guess what? That man you're looking at right there, he could have done all that. He could have been one of those people easily. All he had to do was keep his mouth shut, not complain, not say anything. And he could have been one of those people who's living the high life. Instead, he's making sacrifices. And those sacrifices are for what I just said a little while ago. Truth. That's what he's fighting for. Truth. I know this man. I think he's a good man. And I wanted to share that with you as we started this conversation. Andrei, so good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, Rick. Yeah, where there's truth, there's God. And there's nowhere other way out of this, because God always wins. And we hope we will win with our truth.
Last time you and I talked, I think we were in Istanbul, and you said a lot of interesting things to me. And one of the things, I've thought about you all this week. I was in Dubai with my wife last week, and we were talking about this as we were talking about the protests. And I told her, I said, my friend Andrei Telechenko said that someday people in Ukraine would rise up and they would say, and declare that President Zelensky is corrupt. And as I watched that, I was thinking about you, because there were all the stories that you had told me about how you watched that corruption manifest itself, not now when people are protesting about it, but a year and a half, 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, this corruption was embedded into Ukraine years before all this, but it got grew up much further into the government and in everybody's pockets in the government, starting from low-level government officials up to high-ranking. Everybody's making tons of money on blood, on Ukrainian blood, on Russian blood, on people's blood. And that is what it's so disgusting. The issue of today's situation, that people are making billions on Zelensky's level and hundreds of millions on mid-level and millions on low-level. Regular low-level army officials making millions of dollars on just letting people out of the country. And this is just terrifying for me as a Ukrainian.
So Mr. Trump is right when he says that $350 billion. We don't know what the actual number is. He's using that number. We'll stay with that number for the sake of argument. But let's suppose that it's $350 billion. And he's saying we have no idea where that money went, where it was spent, whether it was really used for military. Is he right? Can you give us some perspective on that comment that the president made that's gotten so many headlines?
Yeah, the president of the United States here is right. I can support him this idea because we saw numerous reports from the IG, from the Pentagon, that there were last year $2.5 billion missing on drones, which came into Ukraine and they never accounted for. At the beginning of this year, the IG report also came out, and there was $1.5 billion missing from the money that was delivered to Ukraine, cash money. So this is just this is what we see in public, but there's numerous and acts of information out there that Zelensky and his regime basically made money on this for the Biden administration and sent that money out through Dubai, where you were there on vacation, using Dubai, other countries, and getting that money back to the West.
Really? I made a comment a little while ago about, I don't know if you saw that, I showed the map and I showed what's going on in Pokrovsk, and I said, you know, it's funny, while all this corruption was apparently taking place, the Russian military has been essentially moving westward across Ukraine. And the Russian military, according to people I know, like, you know, Daniel Davis, McGregor, and others who I speak to who are ex-military officials in the United States, they say the Russian military has become more efficient, has become stronger, has become more disciplined. Their equipment has gotten better. It's become more tested in terms of drone technology and all that, while the other side has gotten weaker. So here's my question. Do you think it's in part the malfeasance and the corruption that has caused the decay in the Ukrainian military?
Of course. Not only just the corruption, but also the unprofessionalism and selling out collaboration with the Western so-called partners from Ukraine, who didn't want Ukraine to become strong at all. They needed to use Ukraine to try to topple the government in Russia, which they didn't succeed for the first 3 months of this war. They knew that Ukraine could not win on the battlefield. Ukraine had no air force. At the beginning of the conflict, Ukraine had 34 aircrafts, which were third-generation aircrafts. Russia had fourth- and fifth-generation aircrafts. That's one thing. Ukraine had no fleet. Ukraine had no satellites. Ukraine had none of those things to fight a Third World War or 21st century war today against especially a country like the Russian Federation, which is one of the strongest armies. And I think after this conflict is one of the most professional, capable armies to fight a conflict in the 21st century era today with having that experience. So today, Ukraine, over the last 30 years, after going out of the Soviet Union, lost everything it had, a fleet, an air force, any satellite capabilities they could have built, because Ukraine had those capabilities of building satellites and aircrafts that could develop its army. They didn't do that for the last 30 years. Hmm. They sold everything off, not to Russia, but to the West, to the Western so-called allies who crumbled the Ukrainian army and then sent it to a bloodbath against the Russian Federation.
If there's one really cool thing about having you here today, is I'm dying to get a sense from you, and I think this is really the money part of this interview, right? I'm dying to get a sense from you of what's really going on right now in Ukraine. I think everybody in the world wants to know. These pictures we're seeing of people taken to the streets, of protests all over Ukraine, stories I've heard recently of people celebrating the Russian military, Ukrainians celebrating the Russian military, people applauding when they attack conscription centers. I'm hearing stories of soldiers who are leaving the front lines dejected and angry and coming back and joining protests. All these things tell me that something's about to break in that country. I don't want to explain it. I'd rather you explain it. Put it in your words.
It's shaking up. Ukraine has been shaken up by the West, because this is all being coordinated and backed by the West and the United States, London, Paris, whatever. They want this war to continue, so they need to change the puppet, as you said earlier. The problem is they don't know who to change it for. The people who are around Zelensky and the opposition in Ukraine, Poroshenko, Klitschko, Tymoshenko, they don't have the support of the people, the majority. They're all being coordinated back by the West. There's no real opposition within Ukraine. It was The system was built the last 3 years to basically destroy it. And whatever that is, what's happening today, it's like spiders in a jar fighting between each other. That's what's happening. In Ukraine, usually doesn't one protest doesn't change the situation. It's a couple of protests, one, two, three. And the fourth one, it's going to hit the target, and then you're going to have a toppling of the government. I think by the end of the year, they're looking up to push the situation forward, cripple the Zelensky's government, to cripple his regime, and how it's starting. Great question. I have some inside stuff on this. Yermak, listening to his lobbyists in Washington, D.C., who he's paying millions of dollars every month to support Ukraine in the West.
Yeah.
They told him, go ahead, destroy Nauru. Go ahead, destroy the special prosecutor. Nothing's going to happen. Trump is fighting those people. He won't care. So you can do whatever you want. You're going to make your government much stronger. And that's what they did. They actually took the bait. And that was the bait to go and cripple their regime. So this is the beginning of the end of Zelensky today. These protests, even though they're financed by the West, they'll bring Zelensky's regime down, which I'm for. It will bring down this government. And I hopefully Ukrainians will choose somebody that will not come from this Maidan or the coup from Poroshenko or Tymoshenko, but somebody who will bring peace, not war.
Well, in the end, remind me to come back because I want to ask you about what the average Ukrainian thinks. But I have another question on my mind, so I'm going to stay one question behind that question. And this question is, it doesn't really matter, does it, who becomes the next president of Ukraine? Russia's just saying the following things. We don't care who the next president is. We just want him to be neutral. We want him to necessarily not be pro-Russia, but he can't be anti-Russia. He can't accept NATO and turn his country into just another NATO satellite. And we will not allow the Europeans to put weapons and soldiers on Ukraine because we would see that as a threat. So those are the four things that Russia wants. After that, who cares what the guy's name is or what he eats for breakfast, right?
Yes, but I know at the same time, because all those people that are there that can take the so-called throne of the Kyiv regime, they're all backing this war, and we're backing this war from the beginning, starting from the war in Donbass, shelling the children in Donbass. Just recently, there's the celebration of the event of the memory of the children who died in the Donbass by the Ukrainian army. They were all backing those up. Tymoshenko, Klitschko, Poroshenko was the president at that time. So you put those people, they cannot bring peace to Ukraine. They'll have to continue the war. So that is the biggest problem. There's nobody else to choose from within the Ukrainian regime today in the system. It was placed this way that there's no way out. The only way out of this is a logical step. We talked about this with one of your shows. Put a middleman from the parliament, have a speaker of the parliament be the acting president, bring in the elections within 6-8 month period and time in Ukraine, and then have the real opposition be able to take part of this, who want peace with Russia, with Belarus, who are not puppets of the West, and have everybody, people in Ukraine, to choose from. Who do they really want? Do they want a normal government, a professional who can bring this country out of chaos, or they want to continue this war, and they will be then toppled and destroyed completely, and then there's going to be a different picture and different situation we're going to discuss.
My reading of your country is the following. There are three forces who control things in your country, right? One of them is the West, and those are corrupt SOBs in places like London and Paris and the capital of my country, Washington, who go in there and said, no, we will decide, as Victoria Nuland said, who the leaders are of Ukraine and who's in and who's out, right? We know that. But then there's also these crazy corrupt oligarchs who are in Ukraine, have always been in Ukraine. Some of them may be living somewhere else right now. And they control what the hell is happening in the country. And then the third element is, I never thought I'd say this, but the literal Nazis in that country, the crazy white nationalist guys who just hate Russia and want to be at war at all times because they just love to watch blood spill, especially if it's the blood of dark people, Muslims, or Jews. So those three forces have had historically a tendency to strong arm all the governments and the power in that country. Will they still be there? And which one do you think will win out in the end? Or can we come up with a way of sidelining those SOBs, my words?
Those three forces are controlled from the deep state. the Nazis are controlled by the CIA, the MI6, the foreign intelligence. You cut down the financing off and coordination, they're done. Their leadership is going to fall apart. The leadership is there for Bielecki, the leader of Azov, is there for the money. I was there. I was the advisor to the first deputy prime minister of Ukraine, overseeing law enforcement, Ukraine intelligence, and military in 2014. I have files on these people. I saw who they are. They're just for the money. The middleman will be there, but they'll run with the right law enforcement. They can be controlled. The oligarchs, they all, the ones that are free today, Akhmetov, Lovochkin, Mindich, Butkevich, the ones that are in Ukraine around Zelensky today, they're all working with the British intelligence and the U.S. intelligence. Lovochkin is working for the CIA. He sold off Yanukovych in 2014. He gave him protection through the director of CIA, Brennan. He's being protected. He can fly to the U.S., fly to Monaco. He has no problems. Akhmetov is working for the MI6. He has a great mansion in London and Paris. No problem with that. Pinchuk is also working for Soros and the CIA. So everything is getting back to all these puppeteers. Ukraine elites, the so-called elites, for the last 30 years sold Ukraine off, not to Russia, not to Moscow or to Putin, which they're trying to say they did. That's the problem makers. No, they sold out to Washington, London, Paris, and Berlin. That's where the problems are coming from. Those guys are bringing and using Ukraine and say, oh, there's these idiots there. Why not use them? That's unfortunate how they treat my country. That's why I came out with the truth against Biden and the corruption in Washington 8 years ago, and I'm still continuing to that fight today. Because these are the puppeteers that are destroying Ukraine and trying to bring apart one nation. We in Russia were one country. We are connected by church. That's what they're trying to destroy our church. So that's why everything that's happening in Ukraine today has to be, and Russia is acting as a way, because it's in the national security interest, and it's in my interest that Russia will free my country from Nazism, not having that there in Kiev.
That's amazing, because, you know, the picture that I painted is three circles, right? There's the circle that involves the outside influence, CIA, Western leaders, all that crap. And then there's the other circle of the, you know, the Nazis and the nationalists who are crazy, or it seemed to me they're crazy anyway. And then there's the oligarchs, the billionaires who somehow made tons of money in that thing. What you're saying is, no, Rick, there's not three circles. There's really just one circle, because everything is controlled by money from MI6, CIA, and other intel sources around the world. And until you stop that flow, those people will continue to control. And once you stop the money flow, those people will be powerless. So that's really the solution to the problem in Ukraine, right?
Yes. Yes, that's what I've been talking about. What Donald Trump could have stopped this war in 24 hours, signing an executive order, getting all the CIA out of Ukraine, military intelligence out of Ukraine, stopping the financing of this bloodbath, and stopping this war, because the United States is right now trying to be in the middleman, but the Biden administration will start to become the part of the conflict, and they can stop it. Right now, the Trump is trying to go against and say, we want Russia to stop bombing Ukraine. But Ukraine is bombing civilian targets within Russian territory, and Russia's reacting. Hmm. Stop your own Zelensky, who you own today, his regime, who you finance. Stop him from bombing everything outside of Ukraine, everything outside within the civilian targets in Russia or eastern Ukraine or any other target. Stop the war, and nobody's going to get bombed. At the same time, you have the Washington bombing everything out of Iran. So, sorry, for, I don't want to use any bad words. You have Israel bombing everything out of Gaza, and it's for the sake of national security of those countries.
Yeah.
Why nobody can take in the sake of national security of the Russian people and people who are living in these territories, that they're being killed and destroyed by the Kyiv regime, who is corrupt, sold off, because they own them. That's why they're for them, because they can use them, and they need to use them to maneuver with Russia and then make trade deals with Russia in the future. That's what Trump is trying to do.
What happens when the Russian military continues its onslaught, which it seems to be in an onslaught right now, continuing to move westward? Military analysts say once the Russian take Pokrovsk, because it's a key geographic and military hub, it pretty much can do whatever the hell it wants to, and the Ukrainian army will all but collapse. What happens if that happens? Have you thought that through?
Yeah, the Russian military is going actually pretty fast. In June only, they moved 568 square kilometers within only 1 month. That's a pretty large landmass. More than 25 square kilometers per day. That's a huge movement forward, trying to save and not bomb everything out of those little cities. Pokrovsk is the last hub, the last fort base for the Ukrainian military. Not just the hub, but it's a fort base. That's the only thing. After that, they have nothing else protected. And they've been fortifying Pokrovsk for the last 8 years with NATO supplies. After that falls, it goes down within Dnipropetrovsk pretty fast because it's a straight land, no hills, no nothing, no big cities going back in between that. So the Russian army can move in pretty fast. The same with Kharkiv. Kharkiv is surrounded. Sumy is surrounded. The Russian army is staying and waiting. So the next step, I think, will be not just after taking over Pokrovsk, Zaporizhia will be the next city who's going to be basically freed by the Russian army within the Ukraine territory.
Well, just so the viewers know what we're talking about, the eastern side of Ukraine is a land bridge that leads all the way to Crimea, and the Russians are just saying, look, to hell with it. Most of the people who live there are ethnically Russian anyway, and we're sick and tired of being blocked from Crimea, which we basically have made a part of Russia a long time ago. So once we have that, we're pretty much going to be good. That's the sense I get. Now, you know, I'm not in there during the meetings between Lavrov and Putin. I have no idea what they really plan to do, but that seems like what makes sense to me. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense, and it does make sense also that this part of the world, which was always part of Russia for the last thousands of years, where Ukraine is today, nobody's going in and annexing and going into Canada or Mexico and saying we have to join the Chinese or BRICS or Russia bloc and we're going to be surrounding the United States.
Yeah.
If somebody would have done that, I think the United States would bomb the shit out of whatever Ottawa or Mexico City. I think that would be the next case and be in national security interest. Today, these stories were historically part of Russia, even Kyiv and Western Ukraine, which is today. So if Russia signed a peace deal in the beginning and in the end of the 80s, 89, when the Berlin Wall fell down, Russia moved forward. The Soviet Union moved forward and said, we are going to take our forces back, unite Germany, but you don't move forward with NATO. Everybody lied. The West lied about that. They moved more than 10 times eastward.
Yeah.
They took control over different large territories. And now they took control over a strategic point, Ukraine, which is always historically. You go to any university in the United States, you teach political science. They always tell you, historically, Ukraine would never cannot join NATO. This has been taught in every university in the United States.
Hmm.
And the White House does not know that. Come on, this is just a big game being played.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, I think it's fair to say that the United States and the West, but mostly coming from the United States, has done everything possible since the end of the Soviet Union to lie, cheat, and steal its way into everything having to do with Russia. And I think they're going to have to pay the piper now. I mean, I think there's no question that at least this guy who's in charge of the Kremlin now, I think they call him Putin or something like that, right? This guy's not going to take any crap anymore, and he's just not going to believe anything because he's been lied to so many times. He's like, no, I want to see it on paper, and I want to see it backed up. And until it's on paper, and until it's backed up, and until we test it for at least 6 months, we're not going to agree to anything. Because, I mean, how many times can you lie to me and slap me in the face and tell me, you know, there's an old expression in the United States, you know, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining, right? It's an expression used by a lot of military guys. And I think that's kind of what the Russians are saying right now. This idea that they want to put peacekeepers, for example, in Ukraine, that's crazy. I mean, how stupid do they think they... Oh, yeah, we want you to stop the war when you're winning while we put in Frenchies and Brits, right, who are with the Ukrainian military, and you're going to agree to that. I mean, what do they think they are? First graders, right?
Ukraine had the French 100 years ago, the so-called Ukrainian government at that time, for 2 years it was there in Kyiv. When the French left, they took everything, the food away from the people. That's what the glorifying of the French were in Ukraine, trying to save them from the so-called Red Army 100 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't want to go into history, but the main part here, if the West would leave Ukraine alone, we would have a new government, a neutral government, and Ukraine would make a peace deal on its own with Russia much faster than this puppet regime and this government from the outside of Ukraine being pushing Ukraine to peace. We will have peace in 24 hours if the United States and the West leaves Ukraine alone with Russia. We will bring peace and the bloodshed will stop.
So let me ask you the question I wanted to ask you before that I kept pushing back and back and back because I didn't want to jump all over the place and confuse our viewers. So let me ask you now. People all over the world have seen these protests. They've seen people taken to the streets. They've seen people who look really angry. You know, you're saying some of that is manifested, collaborated, orchestrated perhaps by the West. And I don't blame that. Like, for example, why are some of these signs in English, for example, when we look at them, which usually is a telltale sign that USAID or somebody might be behind it. And I understand that. But when you look at these people, they are angry, they are frustrated, and there is a sense that the worm is turning for Zelensky inside of Ukraine. Tell me what you think. They're your people. These are your brothers, your sisters, your family members, your friends. What do you think is really going on in the hearts and minds of people inside Ukraine right now?
People are fed up with corruption. People are fed up with the Zelensky regime basically putting a dictatorship within Ukraine, and everybody's quiet about it. People are fed up that they're being thrown like dogs to the front lines against their own will. People are fed up that Ukraine is losing and they have to go and fight for whatever they're fighting for. Not the Ukraine government, but the government that is sending money outside of Ukraine, making billions of dollars on this. People are fed up of all this. And I think by the end of the year, my prognosis, I usually don't want to do that, but I've been talking about this for a couple of weeks already, that my prognosis of Zelensky will be toppled by the end of this year, and we will see something different in Ukraine.
You're saying he's going to be toppled by January 1st. He will be taken out.
We'll have a new government in Ukraine. Ukraine is being shaked up really hard today. Zelensky doesn't have the power to control it anymore. He lost. He took the bait for the so-called destruction of Naboo by his Western advisors. It was a bait to topple his regime. This is the beginning of the end.
What do you think of the EU coming out against this guy, Zelensky, in the last 4 or 5 days? Something I thought I'd never see. I mean, they've convinced us that he's, you know, the second coming of Jesus. He's Mother Teresa. He's Gandhi. He's an amazing human being, a genius. All these things that they've made him out to be. Every time I turn on the TV, he's with a king. He's with a queen. He's with a president. He's with a prime minister. They're singing happy birthday. I mean, it's crazy what they've done to this guy. And all of a sudden, in the last 4 days, they're not going to give him money. They're criticizing him. They're calling him corrupt. What the hell happened?
They're losing control over him. That's why these Naboo organizations, they were there from the beginning to control from outside the Ukrainian elites and governments from within. Naboo was formed. I was there when it was being formed by George Camden, by Ambassador Pai. That's a different story for a couple of hours. I don't want to go into it.
A lot of our viewers don't know what the hell you're talking about with Naboo. Tell our viewers, first of all, what's Naboo?
The protest and why this is how happened. Zelensky canceled this anti-corruption, the so-called anti-corruption bodies, which never put anybody corrupt in prison. They were there, formed by the U.S. government, the FBI, the Department of Justice, from outside of Ukraine, after the coup in 2014, as the governing bodies took away the government protocol and government power from the prosecutor's office, the security service of Ukraine, the police, and formed them into this NABU, the National Anti-Corruption Bureau, and SAPU, and the Special Anti-Corruption Prosecutor. That's what these bodies were formed. They were loyal. I knew that the first head of NABU, Artem Sitnik, he told me personally that he is loyal to the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv, that he's reporting back everything to the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv, that these bodies are loyal to the U.S. government because they're financing them. And that's what it was from the beginning. And that's why EU and Washington is so angry about, especially EU's being used as the front man today, is very angry about Zelensky and trying to push him to back down, which is he's doing, to bring back, again, this NABU and SAPU in power with his new laws next week. That's what they're trying to push him, because they lost control. They were afraid they're going to lose control over him. And these bodies were being used to take off and destroy Zelensky. That's why he destroyed them beforehand. But at the same time, he started shaking the situation underneath him with the support he had in the West. Because as soon as they lost control over the puppet is not being interested. As soon as its strings get ripped, the puppet has to be changed.
So all these things that we're seeing are signs that the West is fed up with Zelensky and they want him out and they want to replace him with somebody else. That's what you're saying is really going on right now.
Yes, that's what happened. That it was the plan from the beginning before even Trump took office.
You think they'll get him out or do you think the people will get him out?
With the support, look, in Ukraine, if you go out on a protest right now,
yeah,
any protest, even mothers of the killed soldiers on the front line, heroes of which they have emblems of heroes of Ukraine, come out and say, we're the mothers of those soldiers. They've been taken out by the police within 30 minutes. These protests are there all over the country. They're there because they're being protected and supported by the same people who own Zelensky. That's why they're still not being thrown to prison or not being captured by the security service of Ukraine and thrown to some gulag where Gonzalez Lira got killed and tortured.
You're talking
about why these people are still there.
I may have misunderstood you. Are you talking about the protesters? Are you asking, because I'm asking this question, if you're not, why are the protesters being allowed to protest in a country where usually people are put in prison just for criticizing the Zelensky government?
That's what I'm saying. They're being protected and supported by the G7 ambassadors and embassies and the governments, not just because they're written in English, but because they're there protecting them. And they're there because Poroshenko is their puppet, Klitschko is there, and these people are being coordinated and supported. Not all of them. Some of them go out there
for
their heart.
Of course, yeah.
A lot of them go out there for their heart. I'm not saying everybody's there, but they're coordinators. Even the politicians themselves not always know how it works. During the coup in 2014, the politicians had no idea what they were doing. There were people who were on the ground coordinating this. And this is what's happening in Ukraine today. And the West, who made Zelensky, who he is today, a dictator, they're going to destroy him with their own hands.
Andrei Telechenko. You know what? Let me ask you one more thing, my friend. At the beginning of this interview, I said, you know, people who believe in truth make sacrifices. You made a sacrifice because, you know, you could have a couple $1 million in your bank account right now if you'd stayed over there and decided that you were going to go along with the original master plan, which was to put Mr. Zelensky in office and do all the things that we've seen or that we're now hearing have taken place there. Has there ever been a time when you have, like, in the middle of the night, woken up and said, you know, if only I'd done that, I would be a richer man today? Do you ever think of that?
I would have told you... A lie if I said no. I did sometimes, yes, there's a mind, but at the same time, I say right away to myself, thank God I'm not with them. Thank God I don't have blood on my hands. Thank God that I'm not part of that bloodshed with the Zelensky regime, that I am trying to make peace in my country and unite my country with its brothers in Russia and not bring this war to World War III.
And by the way, the people of Ukraine are good people, generally speaking. They're kind of the brothers and sisters of a lot of the other people in this region, including the Russians, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Especially if they're very close to the we are close to Russians more than anybody else. Our even Russian doesn't have such a big accent as the Belarusians do with the Russians. So we are more connected together with Moscow and Kiev than any other Slavic nation in this region. So we have to bring this back together. We have one church, one patriarch, which is in Moscow, Patriarch Kirill. It's our patriarch for our church in Ukraine.
Yeah.
So this is where we go to, and it's been there for thousands of years.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of times in that church lately, it's a fascinating, wonderful, historic, rich story that suddenly people in Ukraine are being punished for, interestingly enough, for what they believe religiously, which is as crazy as anything that we've seen before. And unfortunately, it also is not getting the kind of attention in the West that it probably should. But you, sir, are kind to share your time with us. And I respect you an awful lot, my friend, for all that you do. And hopefully things will turn out right in your country. Thank you again for taking this time to take us through this. Andrei Telechenko.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Thank you. And all the best to you. God bless.
All right. Likewise. Well, that's it from us. You know, it's important to have these kinds of conversations, especially as we watch news happening. And I think it's especially important to be able to tell the news story and then analyze it with somebody who really has an insider's perspective on that story, like Andrei Telechenko does. it makes it richer. It makes it more important. And we understand the story better kind of, you know, through his sacrifice, which I understand. Again, this is our show for today. I also have a podcast. It's called Journalistically Speaking. You can find it on YouTube, by the way. And I'm also on X, in case you want to tell me what you think of shows like this one and others that we do. I'm Rick Sanchez. You can find me on Twitter, on Rick Sanchez TV. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll be looking for you here next time.